This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Powered by Insperity.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Bill Harmon and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps. Here's John Granato.
I hit it hard, man. So far, man.
No land. Good morning, everybody. This is one of my favorite shows because I'm in studio by myself. I'm in control. Got my producer, Sean, and me, and we're going to have Billy Harmon come on, but we're just going to take our time. We're going to talk about a lot of things, but I'm so proud to be a Houstonian because after watching the ladies' U.S. Open at Champions, it's just so rewarding in so many different ways. And first and foremost, our Mr. and Mrs. Jackie Burke. Jackie Burke is just an icon of icons. 97 years old. Now listen to this. Champions Golf Club has hosted the Men's Ryder Cup in 1967, the Men's U.S. Open in 69, won by Orville Moody. That's back in 1969. It's 2020, and we just hosted the Ladies' U.S. Open. We've hosted the Men's U.S. Open, like I said. We've had the Ladies' and Men's USGA Amateurs. We've had the Tour Championship. And it just goes to show you what kind of facility Champions is. And this time, they hosted the Ladies' U.S. Open on both of their golf courses. One is just as good as the other. How many courses can say have this pedigree? Not many. And it's because of Jackie Burke and his philosophy. He always said, Epsy, you got to keep something in the pipeline. And he has for so many years. I congratulate him. Him and his good friend Jimmy DeMeritt, 1956, they had won, you know, the Grand Slam of golf. Jackie won the Master. Jackie won the PGA. And they wanted to get in the golf business. So we're going to talk more about this. Take our time. This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on Sports Map Radio. Y'all stay tuned, and we'll be right back. You know, y'all.
Listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Powered by Insperity.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Bill Harmon and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps. Here's John Granato.
John is out celebrating life with his wife and family, enjoying time off during Christmas. So I happen to be in studio with Sean and four microphones. Nice. It's quiet. But on the other line is, of course, our great friend, Bill Harmon, who has also, you know, I mean, how many years you been doing golf, Bill?
Well, I started playing golf 66 years ago.
66.
So I've been tortured by it for 66 years, Charlie.
Well, you know, you watch the ladies' U.S. Open at Champions by television, and I was out there. And, you know, from the start of the week, Billy, it was just so well orchestrated, the infrastructure. I had to go to a hotel and have a COVID exam, and just like everybody else, all the volunteers, all the players, we got our results. You could go on property, but they checked your temperature. Everything was just done by the letter, and you know, putting on a major championship is difficult, but there's so many volunteers that make this work. The infrastructure, Champions, two golf courses. After it's all said and done, Bill, how do you look at that week that we just had?
Well, you know, Charlie, I was at the men's open at Wingfoot, and we had to do the same thing, same protocols. And as the week wore on, just like you, I was so impressed by USGA, Wingfoot, the volunteers. Like you said, they did it to the letter. There was no guesswork. You were either doing this or you weren't coming on property. You couldn't weasel your way into different clubhouses or different places. And I think they had to do it that way. It was simply a yes or no. There was never any maybes going on. And as the week wore on, I was so impressed by it. And as you just explained it, the champions, they did exactly the same thing there to put on this fantastic tournament. And so I watched it with great interest. Having been at Wingfoot and seen what the USGA had to do and how well organized it was. And then to see the golf was terrific, you know, and as I watched it during the week, a couple things struck me. And Steve Elkington called it, I thought, on the show last Saturday. The lag putting was going to be so critical. And not a criticism, but I saw some of the worst long putts all week long. But I know that the greens are difficult and fast and undulating. I'm actually just highlighting what Elkie said, that the long putts were going to be very difficult. And you obviously saw some great ones, but you saw some people that got on the wrong side of humps or the speed was off. And you saw a lot of them, you know, 6 to 12 feet off. So I thought the lag putting, as it turned out, was very, very important. And then you had to drive it in the fairway because the course obviously played pretty long there on the weekend. So obviously, you know, anybody that birdies the last three holes to win a major championship will go down in history as one of the great finishes of all time.
Unbelievable. And the golf course, you know, the first two holes at on the Cypress course are going right back into the north wind. And they were playing 420, 425. I mean, that just starts your day off. So the course did play long because of also the rain and the cold. But the other thing, Bill, that was I found really difficult was the chipping. Even though the greens are big, the pin placements were such that it was easy to miss a green on the short side. And if you're a little bit aggressive and you might be playing it 30 feet away from the pin and let it, say, go left. But if it goes too far, the pins were placed on kind of like a shelf, and the ball would roll off another 20, 30 feet. So the girls had to fight that also. The par threes were fair. The famous fourth hole that was Hogan's last hole that he played in competition was magnificent. So as we, you know, you walk around the golf courses, there are certain areas that are really, really a lot of fun to watch. You can watch two greens at the same time. But I spent a lot of time on the driving range, and I showed you a couple pictures today of the ladies' modern swing, and they're beautiful.
Well, they've got the most beautiful golf swings you could ever imagine, really. And I think that the quality of play and the quality of their longer clubs, really, their hybrids and things of that nature, are really something, really, really something. And, you know, I prefer, to be honest with you, courses to watch tournaments where the course plays tough. I don't really enjoy watching the 20, 25 unders anymore. I can be very candid about that. So I enjoyed both opens this year, the men's and the women's, where pars were difficult on every single hole, and it tested you from the first tee on Thursday to the last hole on Sunday. And at the end of the day, there were a handful of people under par at the champions. There was only one person under par at Wingfoot. And I think every now and then I thoroughly enjoy watching that. Now, there was a time in golf where par was the standard of excellence. I'm not saying we need to bring that back. But I just enjoyed watching the difficult conditions. A little disappointed when some of the players were complaining about not playing the ball up on Saturday because there was mud on the ball and things like that. You know, golf is an outdoor sport. Wasn't meant to be fair. And Chichi Rodriguez said one time, if you don't want mud on the ball, hit your drive lower then. So that was about my only disappointment. I read an article where a lot of the players whined about the conditions Saturday. But other than that, it seemed like a great event, Charlie.
Well, the one thing in the rule book, and the USGA and the RNA write the rules book, if the ball is unfit for play, say if you cut it or it gets scraped, you can take it out of play. Well, I think in this situation, you can argue that the balls were unfit for play. Now, the PGA Tour plays lift, clean, and place more than the USGA. So it's either
USGA one, never does.
You know, it's either one or the other. I don't see why you're going to force a player.
So you were on the side of the ladies whining about it.
Well, not necessarily whining, but it was factual. I mean, it was, and you could stand behind a mud ball. It's, you know, it reminds me of a pitcher in baseball. You know, they put a little spitball on that thing, and that ball's going to go anywhere.
I get it.
And it looks like a knuckleball.
You know, as I watched it, Charlie, I never saw anyone take a drop from casual water.
There was no casual water. That was interesting.
But so that's what I was thinking. If there's no casual water, then it's, you know, the proverbial rub of the green.
Yeah.
And to me, adversity is part of golf, you know. And I don't know. I just I believe you play it where it is. And if there's no casual water and the conditions are playable, you know. And, you know, Chi-Chi was right. If you hit your drives lower, the ball won't get the mud on it. They're trying to hit it so high and carry it so far.
Hop, skip, and a jump. I followed Stacey Lewis quite a bit, and she is a magnificent player. Her record, and she's won. But the U.S. Open conditions forces them, and I played in two U.S. Opens, and I didn't sense this when I played, but they're playing more defensive golf than they are offensive, and every now and then that creates a swing that is not going to be your best. But the winner on Sunday, I mean, she just was incredibly, you know, on the offensive, especially coming in the last three holes.
Well, she mentioned, which I thought was interesting, that she actually was looking at the leaderboard. So she must not have had a sports psychologist to tell her not to be responsible for her own actions out there. And she said she played aggressive because she looked at the leaderboard. Now, some of the modern-day players don't look at the leaderboard. And I wonder, had she not, would she have made those three birdies in a row? So there's all kinds of ways to do this and play this game. But like I said, I can only remember maybe Charles Schwartzel birding the last four holes at Augusta to win by a shot. I don't recall the last time somebody birdied the last three holes in a major championship to win by a shot. So I think what she did was just absolutely fantastic.
He is Bill Harmon from California. I'm Charlie Epps in studio. John Granato, our host, is out celebrating the holiday season. But we'll be right back to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, brought to you by Insperity, a company that inspires business performance.
This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Powered by Insperity.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Bill Harmon and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps. Here's John Granato.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Charlie Epps, substituting for John. He's out having fun. I'm with Bill Harmon. We're talking the Ladies U.S. Open that was just held in Houston, Texas. Very successful. We've got a tournament going on, another tournament playing for a lot of money, their biggest paycheck, although the ladies won $1 million for winning the Ladies U.S. Open. So their golf is getting much more attractive worldwide, Bill. But I'm going to ask you a couple questions. And Lexi Thomas, and I watched her at Champions.
Lexi Thompson?
Thompson, excuse me. And it looked like she just didn't want to be there. And she missed the cut. And now she's in second place playing in the CME Group Tour Championship over in Florida. How do you explain that?
Well, to be honest with you, what did she shoot? Five or six over at the Champions, I believe, which is, what was the par there, Charlie? Were both courses par 70 or 71?
71.
Okay, so she shot a pair of 74s, basically, which, as you know, is not terrible golf on a really hard course. So that probably means she didn't putt good or maybe wasn't sharp, but that isn't terrible. That's not shooting 80-80. And these players are so good. As you know, my late brother Dick used to say, elite players are one swing thought away from shooting 65. So it doesn't surprise me. I think the game is so difficult, you can't play good every week. But she does have a look on her face that doesn't really exude a lot of joy, I would say. Maybe that's just her demeanor. I never really thought she recovered from that incident at the ANA Championship when she got penalized for, let's just say at best, a careless marking of the ball. Most players that I've talked to think it was intentional, but only she knows that. And I think that might have bruised her a little bit because it exposed her as someone who might not have played by the rules, let's say. Yeah. And I think when other people and other players look at you that way, it's a tough thing to carry with you. So, but I read that where she did not look happy at Houston. And I wonder if it had something to do with her caddy, who caddies for DeChambeau, who's a terrific caddy. But they're all about information, you know, lots of information. And not all players like all that information. So maybe she felt, maybe once she got out there, that it was a mistake. Not that the guy's not a great caddy. The record is there. But if that's not your way of playing golf, worrying about the density of the green and the air and all that stuff, which, by the way, is fine, a lot of players don't want all that information. A lot of people just want to know, do you putt this on the left edge? I know guys like Dustin Johnson don't like playing in the Ryder Cup or President's Cup with Phil Mickelson because Phil runs the show. And they don't want to think about all that stuff. So perhaps that was a pairing that appeared to be great at the start of the week, but when Lexi got out on the course, perhaps it was just too much information. I'm just trying to read between the lines.
Yep.
Because there's no questioning what a great caddy that gentleman is because of the record he has with DeChambeau, but not everybody looks at the game the same way. So she had her brother back on the bag this week. She said how much better that was or how much she enjoyed it. Didn't necessarily say it was better. So I can never really answer that question, how a player can miss a cut one week and play good the next, because to me it's just golf. You know, I think all you need to know about golf is Tiger made a 10 on a par 3 and then played the last six holes in 5 under par. So that explains golf in a nutshell to me.
The one person I missed was Michelle Wee. She wasn't there, you know. The other person I really enjoyed watching was Lydia Ko. She has grown up. She's a young lady. She won a lot as a junior, you know. And now she's struggling as an adult. You know, you have any answers for that?
Well, you know, she's working with Sean Foley, and that seems to have really helped her. But she was another young player that started making a lot of changes with teachers and caddies and agents and all that stuff. And she was just a teenager, 15, 16, 17 years old, and the pressure of the world on, you know, we see these kids and we see how good they are and we think they're oblivious to being human. She was a young lady, a teenager, now thrust into the limelight of the number one player in the world. And I don't know of any teenager that would be equipped to do that. And if there ever was one, you would have thought it had been Lydia Ko with her beautiful and wonderful demeanor. She carries herself just so beautifully. And so she maybe had to go through some of these struggles to find out who she is and what she wants out of life. And now she's back playing good. She shot 65 yesterday, I believe.
Wonderful.
And I'm happy to see it. I think she was a wonderful for the LPGA Tour, and she handled herself with such grace and dignity. And she's done so during her slump. So I'm a big fan of Lydia Ko. I think her swing looks better. This isn't a knock on other teachers. I think a lot of times it's easy to knock other teachers, but it's kind of what I said with Lexi Thompson with caddies. You know, the caddy and the player have to jive together. It doesn't always mean that one of the two are not good at their job. It's a relationship. They have to have a rapport. And you have to have the same with the teacher, and you have to be able to do what the teacher wants you to do under pressure. And Lydia has slowly picked herself up off the ground with Sean Foley, and she's starting to play better. And if a great player gets her confidence back, you should be able to see some good things from him.
I had the pleasure of watching Lydia hit balls right next to Sean Foley, who's been a friend of mine for many years because of my time with Angel on the PGA Tour. And he explained it, and he did simplify her swing and try to get her head, you know, on straight and tell her how good she was. So I enjoyed that very much. And the other person that I really have always admired on the ladies' tour and is Emby Park. She has a demeanor. She carries herself, you know, very, very quietly confident. And her swing is not a classic swing, but it repeats itself over and over and over again.
Well, her record is unbelievable how good it
is.
You talk about someone who moves through professional golf quietly. Boy, there's never been one like her.
Yeah.
And tremendous rhythm. She's got tremendous poise and composure.
Unbelievable.
All the players are nervous, but boy, she never looks nervous to me. So she's a remarkably good player, Hall of Fame player, just wonderful golfer. And she put on a nice run on Sunday, you know, early on as the telecast was when the leaders were going out. Some of the commentators are saying even par might end up being pretty good by the end of the day, and it almost was pretty good if the young lady didn't birdie the last three holes. And the Olsen girl, what a beautiful golf swing she has. Wow.
Yes, that was terrific to watch her do what she did, and the way she swings the golf ball is really elegant. I mean, and everything is perfect. But Bill, we're going to break here in a minute or so, and we're going to start on the next segment about, you know, the next Tiger Woods. It's unbelievable how Charlie Woods looks exactly like his dad swinging the club. Have you noticed that?
I saw a little bit of it. Yeah, I'm hoping that they don't make him the next Tiger Woods and they leave him alone and just let him be Charlie Woods. But good luck on that, huh?
All right. Well, we're going to discuss that more with Bill Harmon when we come back.
There'll never be another Tiger Woods.
Yes. And this is Charlie F. Charlie F's Golf Hour brought to you by Insperity, a company that inspires business performance.
You're You're listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Powered by Insperity.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Bill Harmon and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps. Here's John Granato.
Wonderful. But Sean, last night I was watching the Bee Gees, the special. You got to get some Bee Gees music. That was really, really a nice special, and it was brought back a lot of memories, seeing that I'm such an old guy. But I'm sitting here reading a paper in Insperity Herald, a company that has grown to over a $4 billion company, expanded all across the United States. They have all the regions, the Western region, Central region, Eastern region, and then the Northeast region. And if you're going to turn the corner this year, start 2021 with some vigor, and you want some HR help, give Insperity a call. I guarantee you they will really help you in every way that you think you need help. And it's a great culture. I mean, from the owner, CEO, founder, Paul Sarvadi, to the senior executive of marketing and sales, has a unique perspective on life. Jay Minks, their COO, Steve Arispe, and the people just love working for Insperity because they have perfected the art of allowing their employees to do what they're trained to do. So, having said that, they want to wish everybody a happy holiday season, a prosperous new year, and believe me, they know what we've all put up with this year. We're going to get it behind us, and 2021 is going to be so much better. So, Insperity, a company that will inspire business performance. How about that? Hey, Bill, do you like that? Do you like my ad right
like
there?
Like what?
What I just said about Insperity.
I love that ad. I love Insperity.
I mean, they really know how to do it. So let's move on. This kind of is a little silly season. They got a unique golf tournament down in Florida, where father-son major champions such as Tiger Woods playing with his 11-year-old son. You know, everybody's there. What do you think of this event? And do Tiger and Charlie have a chance?
Well, I don't even know if that's the, you know, let's face it. Tiger's kids have been protected from the public's eyes for years, and they should be, in my opinion. I love having Tiger play with his son in this event. I think it's really cool, very cool. And he seems like such a handsome young man. But I'm always more interested in the person than I am the golfer. So all this next Tiger Woods stuff makes me a little bit nervous because I tell parents of my junior players that I'll be more interested in their children as human beings than I will golfers. So my first sense is this going to be something that he becomes a freak show and everybody's going to put unusual pressure on him? That's something that my first concern is. I also think it's interesting. I'm going to take a different tact here, and it's going to be unpopular, but it shouldn't be that unusual that a father loves his son and the son loves his father. So we're making such a big deal about Tiger and Charlie. But is their relationship any different than Longer's and his kids or anybody else's there with their son or daughter? So I think it should be natural for kids and parents to love each other. We seem to make a real big deal about Tiger and Charlie's affection for each other, but I think that should be a natural thing. And perhaps we do it because of, you know, Tiger's some of his personal difficulties over the years. But I think it's great, but I think it's also very naturally. Naturally, you've talked about your love for your daughters, your love for your grandson, and their love is no different than your love for your grandsons. I think a big deal is being made about that, too, for some reason. But more importantly to me, and I mean this, I'm not really going to care how great he plays or doesn't play. I hope it's just a wonderful experience for both of them, which it should be. And I hope that Charlie can have some kind of normal childhood, which will be very difficult with the social media and the media these days, and that they can go through life as normal fathers and sons, like you did with your daughters and I do with my kids and stuff. And I think the sad thing for the tournament, Charlie, is there's no gallery. You know, this would have been the all-time home run for a gallery for this event, all time. And I felt the same way about the Champions Tour with Phil Mickelson. And so the COVID thing has hit a couple things here pretty hard. And I'm just kind of sad that there's not going to be the fans are going to get to appreciate this. But I'm interested in the Charlie Tiger thing because he looks like a really cool kid. But I like watching all the players and their kids interact. So to me, I think it should be normal that parents love their kids and the kids love their parents.
Yes, I it's so true, Bill. And but Tiger moves a needle, and
sure does.
The announcers they promote it, but you know the hardest thing about being a spectator last week at the Ladies U.S. Open, you know what it was? There were no spectators.
No people. That's right.
You know, there
no concession stand.
No, not the atmosphere was, and so many great shots and great, you know, hole in ones. They had three hole in ones the first day, and then they had the other course going on at the same time. I never heard a roar. I never heard and that's such a part of sports. I mean, spectators and just like watching the NFL and no spectators. But hopefully, as we turn the corner and the vaccines are here and everybody's getting there, and it's going to take probably until the middle of summer until we get everybody vaccinated, not only in this country but in all of the countries all over the world. So we got a long ways to go, Bill, with this COVID crap.
Sure looks like it.
And yep. But this is such a resilient country. We overcome a lot. We have proven that, you know, you can knock us down, but we'll get right back up and work hard. And I admire Tiger for putting his son in the limelight, and
I love it. I think it's great.
And now he's
hope that we let him be an 11-year-old.
Yeah, I think people respect his deal, but I didn't know.
Mark I don't worry Kapka. About the people. I worry about the media.
Yeah, but the golf media have respected Tiger for the most part. I mean, they've always given him himself. But, you know, from Mark O'Meara, from Mark Calcavecchia, Annika Sorenstam, what a golfer she is, and she's playing with her father. So it's a good tournament. I wish they'd
it's a lot of fun. I like it.
I wish they'd have had this when your dad was alive and he could have played with Butch or you or Dick, and that would have been...
No, we should have had a tournament to see who plays with him.
You know, but now as we're looking for, you know, backwards and forwards, one of the golf magazines covers that I liked, and it's such a two different people completely, but great outlooks and teachers. Your brother Butch is on the cover. Now, who do you think's with him on this cover?
I don't know.
George Gankus.
Oh, yeah, that's about 4 months old, that cover.
Yeah, I know it. But, I mean, of all the ones that I've had all year long, I just shows you that two different people teaching the same game have completely different outlooks, and yet they, you know, they can work together.
Well, we should be sharing information. I think teachers compete too much nowadays.
Right.
we should be coming together and sharing information with each other, in my opinion. I'll be honest with you. I do take lessons from other teachers, Charlie. I do it all the time now.
Yeah.
And I tell them right from the start, I'm sick of what I know. I want to know what you know.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how I do it.
Well, the quote from your brother Butch, and always try new ideas.
Always. Yeah.
That's what it says on the front cover of Golf Digest. And George, you know, I love listening to him because a lot of the stuff, it goes right over my head.
It goes over my head, too, by the way. But that's all right. Some people understand it, and he's helping a lot of people. So
I
like the fact that it's new and different. It makes me think. It makes me do a little research. It makes me watch more. It makes me observe different players. I do know that move that he teaches on the downswing, nobody does it.
Yeah.
But it's a feel, I think. He's making a point with that kind of squatting, spinning move that he has everybody do.
Well,
but they don't really do it during their normal swing.
No, they don't. But
you and I both tell people to exaggerate the feel of something. So I understand totally what he's trying to do. Yeah. I get that part for sure.
Pressing into the ground and getting the ground force. Yeah. You know, I've always marveled at somebody that can take their body and jump 7 feet straight up and kick their legs and go across this bar in the high jump. That, to me, is one of the athletic feats that, you know, it's amazing.
Yeah, and they have to squat into the ground to do it.
That's
and
it.
Jump up and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, a lot of this new information and the measuring of it and stuff is very interesting. I work with a guy who measures all this stuff, and what I have found is I don't do it. What I found at age 70, I'm not a leaper. I'm not going to be a high jump specialist.
The thing, you know, that's fascinating me in marketing and golf, and we're going to break it here in about 30 minutes. No, is how shoes can add 4 yards of distance. Have you figured that out?
I can't buy that one. I'm sorry.
Well, this is...
I'm not trying that one.
This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, and we're going to pause for a little ad, and we'll be back and close the show with Bill Harmon. I'm Charlie Epps, and this is a Sports Map Radio Network.
Listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Powered by Insperity.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Bill Harmon and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps. Here's John Granato.
All right, we're back. We got 3 minutes, Bill. This is our last show of the year. It's been a great year. Thanks, you know, to you and John and Joy working with you guys, but as we close the show, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Holidays, and to you and yours, and what do you want to say to our audience?
Happy and healthy. The only two things that I care about in life, being happy and being healthy. All the other stuff is just stuff to me.
And
what? Is there anything else in life to think about? Tell me what you're thinking. I just told you what I'm thinking.
You know,
that's what I try to do every day. Be happy and healthy, Charlie.
I can't disagree with that one bit. I mean, our new addition to our family is a dog named Birdie. And animals bring so much joy to your families because we go through a lot of hardships and so love your dogs. I know you, Gizmo. I haven't heard Gizmo.
He's laying right here. He's a little further away from me, so you can't hear him snoring.
Y'all staying home or are you traveling? Or
yeah, we'll be at home. Yep, no traveling.
With the boys?
We're good COVID patients.
That's it. We got to be that. That's for darn sure. But, you know, I guess number one story of golf in year 2020.
All in 30 seconds?
Yeah.
Who's going to emerge? Who's going to emerge from, who's going to kind of jump into that big five of, you know, the DJs, the Justin Thomases, the Rahms? And I think it's going to be Scottie Scheffler or Will Zalatoris. About those two names?
How about that?
Who's going to surprise us?
Those
are my two picks, Scottie and Will Zalatoris.
I hope Jordan Spieth does.
So, I do too.
But that's it. That's Bill Harmon. I'm Charlie Epps. Sean in the producer today. He got me through this. Merry Christmas to everybody and Happy New Year and Happy Holidays. Play a lot of golf. Thank you very much, everybody. Bye-bye.